Recording it, but before we start, I just want to
Do you turn the
AC? Do you not do the AC? Do you not do it?
I just did turn it on now.
Oh, okay.
Oh, beautiful.
Because I just turned it on.
Kala kavod. Okay, so Mr. Gutman gave me this book to look at, and it's a series of books called Guidelines with Questions and Answers of All Sorts of Things. This one happens to be about challah. So I just want to read you a couple of things that I found that if I'd have seen earlier on, then I would have told you in the introduction. They're just nice, brief things. So it's done question and answer. So I'll read you the question and tell you the answers. So question number two says, in reference to challah, says, what's the significance of the mitzvah? So it says, since bread is the staple food of man, Hashem gave us the opportunity to perform a mitzvah with it on a regular basis, and this mitzvah brings a blessing to the bread and spiritual growth to the soul. And he asks, how important is the mitzvah? So he quotes, wherever the makor is in the back there, according to the sages, this is one of the few mitzvahs for which the entire world was created. Obviously Chazal somewhere. If challah is not separated when required, the grains are cursed and there's a shortage of food. But if the mitzvah is performed, the grains will grow in abundance and one's house will be blessed. As it says, you shall give the kohen the first of your dough, that a blessing shall rest on your home. That's a pasuk in Yechezkel. And, it's known this is one of the three mitzvahs given to women, along with Nida and the Shabbos candles. So it asks, why was this one of the three? So it answers, when Hashem wished to create man, he gathered some earth and water from the world and mixed it into a dough. Since Adam was shaped from the dough, he was called by the sages the challah of the world. Again, there's no makoros here, there's in the back, but wherever that midrash is, obviously. When Chava sinned by causing Adam to eat from the forbidden fruit, she brought death into the world, thereby spoiling the challah. In order to rectify her sin, women were given the opportunity to elevate the dough through the mitzvah separating challah. Interesting. That's right. Which is number six. I read you 2, 4, and 6 so far, and I'm reading you one more, which is number 13. Question 13. It says, when should a woman try to perform this mitzvah? So it says, it's praiseworthy to bake challah on Erev Shabbos in order to perform the mitzvah of separating challah, thereby rectifying the sin of Adam and Chava, which occurred on Erev Shabbos. In addition, there's a great honor for Shabbos to use homemade challahs rather than those bought in a bakery. It's been suggested that the special Shabbos loaves are called challahs, since women are particular to bake enough bread that requires them to take challah. Kind of like that. And it says, some women try to perform the mitzvah when nearing the time of childbirth, so they'll merit a safe birth of a child. There's a Gemara in Shabbos actually, in Bamei Melikin at the end there. It says that women are judged when they're in the Shah Sakana when they're giving birth, and if they don't do these mitzvahs, haven't done these mitzvahs properly, it's bad news for them. So women do take challah, so they should be protected from that. And also it says, some women try to perform the mitzvah during the Aseret Mei Tshuva in order to have an extra merit before Yom Kippur. Anyway, so I saw that in this book over here. So that's that. Okay. Now, so that's on the tape. I have this vision of I want to combine the shirim into like perek by perek. You know, now it's like broken up into funny pieces. So it's going to be very funny. That's like in the middle of between two mission lines that will be inserted. But anyways. Okay. So now we are holding in the second perek. We got to limit the questions. We got to make some progress today, big time. Got to finish the perek and even start the next perek if we can. So we're holding in Mishnah perek based Mishnah Dalet. Okay, so we've spoken out in the introduction a few times that the shiur we need is 5/4 of a kav, 1 1/4 kavin, but here we say it. Here we say it inside the actual shiurim. It says ha'osa isaso kavin. If a person, it's based on that assumption. Ha'osa isaso kavin. If a person makes his dough in less than that, if he makes one kav at a time. Batches instead of one kav and a quarter, so each one will be putter. So then they're putter. However, v'nago ze b'ze, if they're touching each other, do we say that they combine? It depends. They're peturim min challah ad sheyishochu. They're each separate kav, 2-liter batch of dough is exempt unless they're connected in such a way that they're yishochu. Yishochu means is to bite. The sheikh is to bite. The idea is that when you take the two doughs apart, like that one. They're pulled, some of one is pulled with the other. You know, if you put those together and pull them apart, they come back in separate pieces. But if they're tightly and they're intermingled enough that they pull apart, then and pull something away with it, then sort of grip the teeth into it, then now they're combined. And you could add them up together and see if you get the shear of 1 1/4. Rabbi Eliezer, Afaroda, even if you're Rodias apasta is like removing the bread from the oven. So even post facto, after you have baked your kav sized loaves, if you take them down out of the oven, venos and lasal, and you put them into a basket, hasal mitzarf and lachalchala, even the tzal will be mitzaref, combine the shirim together. In other words, he says, of course, if you put them in a bowl or whatever, in a tray, before you bake it, he says, that's one batch. Don't give me any. Don't tell me two batches. One batch. Just in two pieces. He says, even if post-baking it, you kept them in two different trays, but when you take it out of the oven, you put it into a single basket. So then, he says, it's still one batch. And they're combined, and they don't take challah from the loaves. So really, he has two chedushim. First of all, the shiz that you have challah after it's no longer dough and into loaves. And second of all, that the loaves can be combined as long as they're in the same container. There's a machlokas if they need to touch in the container or not, just physically be touching, either yes or no. Okay.
So for Rashi, it's mashma that that's the pshat of Arizo Seifen, that the challah can be taken after it's baked. Because that's in the Arizo, it's in the bag.
So we asked yesterday why it says, it's relevant anyways, I'm about to explain. We asked yesterday why it says Arizo Seifen, which means, so instead of isos seichem, why doesn't it say take it from the first of your doughs? It says take it from the first of your arisos. So yesterday I said that an arisa is a kneading trough, so it's a little strange. But I look carefully. I think the pshat of arisos seichem means the first of your kneadings. It doesn't sound right in English. That's why I fell into that linguistic trap. But you understand the point. It's called the first of your kneadings, as opposed to the first of your doughs. And the from that pasuk, what I saw of Rashi is just there are many drushes made of that, but I didn't see, for example, we'll see in a second, the shear of 5/4, the shear of how much you need, 43 eggs, comes from that word risoseichem. Your kneading is referring to the kneading that they did in the midbar, because in the midbar everyone got, if you recall, everyone had an omer, one omer's amount of man that fell. So that works out to being this shear. I'll do the math in a few minutes. We'll get there, but that's what Rashi says there. That's Rashi. That's only Rashi, I think, on the pasuk. It's in Bamidbar, 15 pasuk 20.
Isn't the point that if you have flour and water, you have to mix them together. It's not kneaded. It's not hard yet. It's only when you knead it, join them together, that
it's hard. So what you said is true. The question is, why isn't that called? Why wouldn't that be called?
That's already Isa.
Oh, you know, Taka, maybe you're right, but exactly, don't forget what you're saying. Maybe that's a pshat. Maybe the pshat is that we've seen, and we'll actually see inside, we've seen inside a little bit today, that really, even though you're supposed to take it from the time that you've done, like, Gilgal, you know, you've kneaded it together, but really, already, once you've poured the water in, you could take it from that point already. And I mean, that's a pshat. Maybe by then, that's the racist. That's a drush that Yerushalmi makes. It's mutter to take it that early because it's the first of the first. It starts, you know, you pour water in the dough, so now there's a bit on top, and yet it's not Isa. Oh, maybe that's the answer to your question.
You mean Arisa comes before Isa?
Well, it's like the little bit on top has now been, even though the bowl hasn't got Isa inside it, it's not dough, but the top, the first bits have mixed water and flour together, and from that you could take and be yotzi. So maybe that's the answer.
What stage did
I
put the saw in?
The saw?
The leavening.
Oh. You're gonna ask a baker. I don't know. I see my wife, she cracks eggs and puts stuff in the bowl and then mix it all together, right?
No, but she uses yeast.
You can't ask me how to make it. I don't even know. I don't know. Okay, anyways, back to we got a fighter. I don't know. Okay, so now, and by the way, surprisingly, the halach is like Rabbi Eliezer, right? Which is surprising. I know that the basket is mitzarf.
Yeah, we do it right.
Yeah. Okay, Mishnah Hay. So what about, now we're talking about, now our topic is talking about flour. Hamafresh chalaso kemach, if you pull your chalaf when it's still kemach, like dry flour. So that's too premature. It's not considered to be kneaded at all yet, and therefore eino chala doesn't count. Whatever you give to the kohen has no din of chala. And worse than that, the gazel biyad a kohen. The kohen has got a gezel in his pocket, so to speak. He's got something stolen, because really, two pshatim. The basic pshat is the person who gave it to him just didn't really realize the dinim, and the kohen had no right to take it. It was a mistake to give it to the kohen in the first place. The kohen needs to give it back. And why should the kohen give it back? Because if he doesn't give it back, a big tekala is going to come out, a big disaster, because the person will think, I've taken challah on my dough in the early stage when it's still flour, and he won't take challah afterwards, and then he'll be eating tevel chayv misa. It's bad news. So he's got to give it back. Ha'isa atzma, and now the dough itself, chayev es b'chala. Just because you pulled off flour doesn't make anything. The dough itself is still chayev once you make it into dough. V'ha'kemach, if the kohen didn't give it back, and you gave the kemach flour to the kohen in the shear of 5/4 of a kal, right? So now, in yeshbo kashir, if it has that amount, chayeves b'chala. The kohen, if he didn't give it back, besides the fact that he's got gezel in his pocket, if he makes it into a challah, a loaf of bread himself, he'll have to take challah separately. He'll have to take, because the flour he got was just regular tevel challah. And he's not supposed to give the flour back. But if he didn't give the flour back, and he makes it into a loaf of bread, a big loaf of bread, so now he's going to have to take challah himself. Kohen take challah too. He'll take challah because what he got was just regular flour that's untithed. Yeah, that's right. Vasur lazarim, and also, now this last point is that the flour that the Kohen gives back to the Yisrael who took it, that now becomes us lazarim. And as the flour he gave back shouldn't be eaten by anybody except the Kohen. Now really that doesn't make any sense, because it's a made up new rabbinic din, because they were afraid that people would see, you know, the Kohen's giving what looks like challah, I guess, back to the Yisrael, and Yisrael's eating it, so it looks a little fishy. So they said once it's been given to the Kohen, even though the Kohen has to give it back, so now it can't be eaten by the Yisrael. So what he'll do is he'll sell it to the Kohen. He'll have to sell it to a Kohen, but he can't eat it himself. That's a chumr ba'alma, as the Bartanura says. However, we'll see the halacha bottom line is like that. So Amr lo, now the rabbis objected to that. That's different Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua's shita was that the flour that's given accidentally, incorrectly to the Kohen and then returned to the Yisrael, so Yisrael no longer can eat it. So the rabbis object to that. They say to Rabbi Yeshua, Amr lo, ma'asa the u kafasha zaken zar. Once it happened that a zaken, that means like, you know, a chacham, literally an old person, but it means a wise person, that was a zar, it wasn't a kohen, and he was kafsha, he snatched that flour. He said, don't give it back, you don't need to give it to any kohenim, I'll eat it myself, and he grabbed it. So that's what is a maisa to show. Well, I don't know if he gobbled it up as dry flour. Okay. So anyways, I mean, whatever, let's say he ate it. He ate it, but not... He definitely did eat it. That's obvious. But the question is, I don't know if... I'm just not confirming he ate it as flour in front of everyone or not. I don't know. He did eat it. Okay? But the point is, so they were bringing this as a maisa, it's a story to show that the chamsa, you see that the chachamim didn't care about this halacha about forcing the flour to be eaten only by a kohen. And he didn't care about that. So Amr Lahem, Sir Yeshua says he can't bring a proof to me from that story at all. Afu kilkil la'atmo, you know? He's also got messed up. You know, he ate it. He ate it, but now he's going to have to pay the consequences, because he was over the luck of eating the... Like, you know, you're right, he did it, but that's his mistake. Now he's going to have to pay the price. But on the one hand, he was kilkil la'atmo. He messed himself up because he was over the durabanan. However, v'tikin la'acherim, he fixed things up a little bit for other people, meaning that now everyone will say, oh, I saw that chacham do it, so now when they do it, they'll have an excuse, so they won't be facing a severe consequence. So he made a Pesach, like a Pesach, you know, for people to not be facing such a severe onish. But anyways, comes out bottom line, like Rabbi Yeshua in this story here, the Pashtus, once the flour goes to the Kohen, it now has to be eaten by a Kohen. Okay, fine. Okay, Mishnah Vav. Here it says now explicitly, finally, Chameshus Revaim Kemach Chayav B'chala. Now finally we say it explicitly. 5/4 of a kav is the amount of a kemach, of flour, that's chayav now to be taken chalaf when it's made into dough. And I'll give you the shot. Want the math behind it quickly? Here's how it works out here. I'll write it down. I'm not going to spend a lot of time.
show you once. So the
We discussed that, and we're not discussing it again. If you remember if, on that point, if you recall, there was a certain set of measurements, and then when they went to Yerushalayim, they made midos to Yerushalmi, they multiplied everything by 1.2, and then again they went to Tzipori, which is like the Mishnaic times, they multiplied by 1.2 again, so a total of 1.44 times inflation. So when it says 5/4 kav, it means 5/4 of the Tzipori kavin. So when you do the math, that's how you're going to get, that's going to stem with the number of eggs. But I don't want to, we discussed that once, we're not revisiting that confusing topic. I want to revisit a different confusing topic. This is worth doing only because, like, it's good to keep them getting the shiurim properly. So here's how it goes. Ariso seichem means your kneading. So what's with the your? Y-O-U-R. Why is it ariso seichem? So Rashi there brings, that's from a sifra, I guess, sifri, that must be a sifra, that it's the amount that they needed in the desert, your kneadings, meaning one omer. Everyone got an omer of man in the desert. So an omer is a tenth of an eifah. Remember that for a second. An omer, that's the shear we're looking for here. An omer equals one tenth of an eifah. Nice little eifah?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Fine, we'll get back there in a second. So now, here's the math. Okay, here's the math. One eifah. One eifah is equal to three saw. Okay? And one saw, I don't know, like this. One saw is equal to, our saw is our 6 liter thing. So remember that, that saw is our six pack of water. So that's six kav, right? And one kav is equal to, remember? 2 liters, exactly, which we came up to saying is in Lugan, we'll go with the Lug root for a second here. Right, or either a quarter of a kav is four, or remember there are four lugin, if you remember, four lug in a kav, and then we said there are six in every lug, one lug equal to six beitza, six eggs. Okay, I'm trying to remember why. There's a mnemonic device, Asklav Gudu, but I'm actually not remembering exactly how it goes. That doesn't matter. It's worth trying to remember if I could.
Asklav
Gudu, is that how it went?
Asklav.
Oh, this is beta. Okay, I think this is how it goes. Okay, Okay, so one from an eifah, this is the mnemonic device, Askalov Gudu. I hope I say this right, I just remember this now. Askalov.
Eifah.
That's eifah, sa, kav, lug, beitza. And gudu, that's 3/6, that's a dalad, 4/6. You chop what's happening here? That's the idea. Askalov Gudu. So if you could remember that. Askalav Gudu. That's the mnemonic put down by whoever. Right. So anyway, if you figured out.
6/4
Right. Askalav Gudu. It's not mine. This, right. That's whoever brought it down somewhere. anyways, so if we multiply, we figure out here, we do the math. We figure that to one eighth, we have 3 × 6 × 4 × 6, right? Beitzim. So 3 × 6 = 18, × 4 = 72, × 6 = 432. You can believe me, right?
Yeah.
So right. So that 3 × 6 × 4 × 6 = 432. And if you remember, that's it for eifah. 432 beitzas in an eifah, right?
Right.
Okay. So if you have a tenth of an eifah, that's an omer. So you'll divide that by 10, and you'll get 43.2 beitza in an omer. That's what's going to come out. And I told you 43.2 beitzas beitzas, eggs, in 3.2 in one omer.
These are medium-sized eggs.
Yes, average-sized eggs. And if you want a mnemonic to remember the beitza business, so I'll show you that chala in gematria is 8 plus 30 is 38, wow. Plus 5 is 43. So 43 eggs. That's a mnemonic.
That's cute.
So there you go. I don't know if anyone brings that down, but I don't know where I heard that or whatever. But anyway, so that's how it works out. So now, if you do the math again, you're going to figure out that, remember, if you remember, if you now do the math, you're going to see that this should come out to 5/4 kav would come out to 30 eggs, not 43.2 eggs, because we're talking about 5/4 sipori kav. You have to multiply that by 1.44. If you should do it there, we'll do 1 second. So if one kav is four lugs, and there are six beitzas in a lug, so that means one kav is equal to 24 yes. beitzas. So 24 beitzas equals one kav. Okay? If you have five fourths kavin, right, so that'll equal to 30. Equals 30. Right, did that? Equals 30 beitza. Okay, now it's 5/4 of a kav is 30 beitzas, yes. Not 43.2, because these are 5/4 kav in tzipori. So if you take 30 and you multiply it by 1.44, you're going to get, I showed that way around, right? Yeah, obviously, exactly. There you go. Times, what did I say? Times 30. It's going to give you 0, 2, 3. No. Because it's 1.2, a factor of 1.2 to get from the Midos Midbar to the Midos Yerushalmi, and then again 1.2 to get from Midos Yerushalmi to Midos Tzipori. Inflation twice. Right. 1.2 times 1.2 is 1.44.
That's why.
Yeah, so there you go. Okay, so if you got that, good. If you didn't get that, I wouldn't sweat it too much. I'm sure you got it. I'm sure you got it.
Of course, it's a precursor for mom.
Exactly. That's right. Good. Okay, so now I have an Askalav Gudu. That's what you had to remember.
Yeah.
Although I myself forgot it. Okay. That. Based on a resocation. Okay, so now, what's included in the 5/4 of the kav, the 43 eggs? It's haim, the flour, usaoran, that's your saor that you asked me about before, the leavening agent, so it's included in the batch. I guess it's flour anyways. Whatever, it's dough. Vesuban, that was the fine bran. Umursnan, and that's the horrible, coarse bran. All that, chamesh dravan, chayavan, all that combines to be 5/4, the flour plus the leaven plus the bran all together. That's going to mix with water. If it's 5/4 of a kav, then it's chayav. Okay, nital mursan mentochan, if you sifted it to get out the mursan, the very coarse bran, it's out now. The chazal atochan, you try to put it back in again. Nope, hare elibaturin, that won't count for anything. In other words, you can't. Mursan is considered part of the mixture. Once it's removed, it can't be reinserted again because it's extraneous, like putting sand back in your mixture. It doesn't count towards the volume.
So scientifically, if you add water then to that thing, does it become bigger or does it all absorb and it's the same volume?
Well, I guess at first it'll fill the cracks between. Then it'll start to swell. Oh.
Ah, so.
Well, I don't. You know, I mean, you can imagine.
Sour, so it smells.
He's saying before it rises. Well, it depends on how much water you put in to answer your question. Right? No, really. Right? If you put in a little bit of water, it'll get absorbed in. You've got a lot of water, it'll bulk up. We're talking about the dry volumetric measurement of the flour. Right. I know. Okay. But Mishazayim.
But then now they have to do with weight, right? Weight.
Well, we kept on seeing weight there. I think that's just, but I don't know why. It's like a.
Because
someone was saying it depends. Yeah. Because they sell it and weight. I guess today flour is very standard, anyways, I'd assume. Right? But it really, I think it should be measured in cups. By me, it's pashit. It should be measured in cups. The person Goodman said, he said the reason why they don't is because if it's aerated, you know, which could happen if you open the bags, so then you can. Then when you scoop the cups, might not be. There might be less flour in it. Right.
So the aeration could be done by
sifting. I mean, not intentionally aerating. I'm just saying that if it's less packed, then you'll be able to fit less inside. If it's
I'm saying they sifted to...
Yeah, I'm saying exactly. It's like, for example, correct. If you sift it first, then of course, exactly right. Then it will be less densely packed, and it will have less grams per cup, right? Because there'll be air inside there. There's a in the beginning of brachas, there's a gemara that says that it says you can't fill a hole, right? You can't fill a pit from its own sand. And there they ask a question: what are you talking about? If you empty out a pit of sand and you put it back in, there's much more because of the air. Okay, I'm not discussing that subject there. No, but I'm just saying that. But it's obviously it's well known that it gets aerated, it gets more bulky. But in any case, I can't answer that. I don't know. I cannot answer that now. Anyways, okay. Now, how much do you take? How much chol do you take? This is now Mishnah Zayin. Okay, so let me say this outside first. This is there's two mahalachim here. One mahalach is like really lumdish. So I'm going to try to explain it. I hope it'll be clear. Okay, the Torah says, "Mereishis arisoseichem titnu l'Hashem truma." From the first of your kneadings, you should give titnu. You should give to Hashem a truma, like a portion. But no shear is given. Okay, no shear is given. But the rabbis, so that would sound like any amount will do. The rabbi darshan that the word titnu, you should give, means it has to be kadina sina, like an appropriate amount to give as a gift. Okay, and then the rabbis define what's like an appropriate amount to give as a gift, like a significant amount. Let's translate it in English: a significant amount of a gift. That's 1/24. That's not from the Torah. The rabbis
worked it out.
They worked it out based on, I guess, their better judgment that an appropriate amount of a gift is 1/24. You can't ask me how they did it. They did it. Okay? So then it's going to come out, if that's true, that a 1/24 is an appropriate amount to give. So then, we've seen the number 24 up here a few times, by the way. Like, for example, I'm not saying this is connected. I'm just saying that it comes up a lot. Like, for example, we had in Key Lime that 1/24 was considered to be a significant amount. Right? Remember that? So you see, I'm not sure if that's the connection. I'm just saying that you see those parallels elsewhere.
You can learn from here how much to give as a tip.
Oh, there you go. That's right. So 4% tip here. You see? So yeah, that's a minimum. A minimum is a 24th. So then they said, so that comes out then that a 24th is a kadena sina. So that means since the minimum size of amount of flour you could have, and let's assume that with the water it's the same volume, 43.2, it's going to come out to being it's going to be 1/24 of 43.2, which comes out to 1.8. So 1.8 betzas. So that becomes like the minimum amount you could give. You should give midrabanan. Well, the minimum amount you should give, according to the rabbis, to fulfill the mitzvah. But this is why I said midrabanan. I hesitated because according to many people, the pshat is that to fulfill your mitzvah doraisa of giving challah, you have to give you 1.8 betzim, because the Torah said give an amount of the giving, and the rabbis are defining that. So the rabbis are saying, if you want to fulfill your mitzvah d'oraisa, we're defining it how much that is as being, you know, we're by the powers vested in us, tell you that to fulfill the d'oraisa requirement, you need to give you 1.8 betzes.
So 1.8 is the allusion to
chara. I don't know. I know what you mean, but I'm not agreeing to that. Maybe it's a coincidence. But this is what I told you is. What I tell you is what I can tell you. That's according to many, that's quite, and they speak out what's part of their counterintuitive. We're saying the rabbis are defining how much you have to give in order to fulfill your mitzvah d'oraisa. But you're not fulfilling your mitzvah d'rabbanan, according to many. Yeah, that is defining. That happens in other places too, I should point out to you. That many places that the rabbis are, I just had it somewhere. I'll come to you in a second. I actually just had it, totally unrelated. So yeah, I'll come to you in a second. Where? Now, others learn it's just their abundance, just nesmachta, and really, like, the Torah has no shear at all, and you can give whatever you want. The rabbis then made this idea of 1/24. Everyone agrees, however, that if you give less than 1.8 beitzos, you'll be yotzi b'diyeved min haTorah. So that's why it's yeah, okay. Now, the rabbis then decided, listen, 1/24, we're going to standardize things, so we're going to say 1/24 across the board if it's for private use. We don't care if it's a big quantity, small quantity, you take 1/24, you give us challah, and if it's for sale, we're going to standardize it, it's half of that 1/48. The reason why we're making it less is because if it's for sale in large quantities, the person will be getting much more than 1.8 bases anyway, so it's a significant gift. So if it's a large quantity, so there we simplified it. Private usage, 1/24. Commercial use for selling, 1/48. That's the story. So now inside it says here, Shira Chala, the amount you have to give for Chala, Echad Me'esrim V'Arba, it's 1/24 of the dough. Ha'osa Isa La'atzmo, if you do it for yourself, whether you do it for yourself, Va'osa Le'mishta B'no, or whether you make it as for the, you know, the wedding of your son. Here's a good rye that Mishta is Dafka about weddings, it sounds like. Mishta B'no, the party for your son. Maybe love Dafka. So the assumption is when you make your son's, you know, wedding, there'll be a lot more than one loaf of bread going around, lots of loaves. And even so, echad me'esrim v'arba, private use, you don't care if it's a big or small quantity, you give 1/24. However, nachtum, if you're talking about a baker, shu osa limkor b'shuk, he's making for sale his loaves, to sell in the marketplace. V'chena isha, or simply a private woman, however, b'shehi osa limkor b'shuk, her plan is to sell her private loaves in the marketplace, since it's now for commercial and sale use, echad marbaim ushmana, 1/48. Is what she has to give of challah. Okay? That's the story. No, done is done. You see, because we're being a derisive, thick enough anyways, it's fine. Nitme sisasa shogeges, like new points here. If she is metame her dough and bishogeg, you know, she didn't mean to, it was, you know, she didn't intend to make it tame, she knew what she was doing. Oh, anusa, or she knew what she was doing, but she had no choice in the matter, whatever that is, right? So she's you know, against her will, like she couldn't be metaheres herself, like Basmata Zev, for example, and she now is an anus, and she is metam of the dough. So now we're lenient on her, and we say, echad m'arba m'shmona, 1/48. In other words, since the dough is going to be burned anyways, the Kohen can't eat it. So even though it belongs to the Kohen, and he can use it for fuel, but we'll be lenient to 1/48, it'll be enough, since it's just headed to the fire anyways. The Rambam in his parish, Mishnah, says that the rabbis wanted to minimize the amount of tamei challah floating around. In any case, but however,
it's a housewife.
Yeah, a housewife. We're talking about women here. No, but the market already is 1/48.
Yeah,
but it's be lenient on the woman, the housewife, as if she's going to market because, like, it's going to be burned anyway, so it's just a waste. Yeah, need the woman tamei challah. Sure. Nitmes mis. Mezida.
That's called onus.
That'd be an onus, I guess, yeah, exactly. Nitmes mezida, maybe before they have latex gloves. So now, if she intentionally is mezid, is metames the dough, so now we won't let her get away with it. Echad me'esrim v'arba, she still has to take off 1/24. Kadesh lo yehei chote niskar, so that a sinner shouldn't profit. No, we're not going to let her. In other words, we saw, for example, in Maaser Sheni, we saw some of the tricks he could use. Bechal is no tricks allowed. We don't want people tricking anything. Oh great, we have time, oh good. Okay, yeah, Mishnah Ches. Yep, and the last Mishnah of the parakeet, good. Okay, so this Mishnah is talking about, if you remember back in the end of yesterday, our first Mishnah, at the end of the first parak, we said that you can't take afrashas from Tamei Do into Tahor Do, or vice versa, because it's a din called Mukaf, which means they have to be close together, and their fear is you'll be matam of the dough, so we don't want them putting too close together. So the Tanakhama back there, the Chum said you can't take challah from Tomei and Tahor. But this now, Rabbi Eliezer in Mishnah Ches is going to be arguing with that. If you recall, a second ago we had Rabbi Eliezer, just putting into the back of your mind, when we talked about Radia Sapas, he said that Mukaf, he was very lenient about combining doughs. He said even after baking, put it in a basket. Maybe they don't have to touch. Okay, so now here he comes up again, being lenient to the idea of mukaf. He says, the rabbi's fear over there was you might accidentally come to let your doughs touch. So he's going to first of all say, like, no, so you won't. Be careful, it won't happen. Right? The only problem is that mukaf requires, technically all mukaf means is in the same room, like in the same general location. It doesn't have to be touching. But so that wouldn't be a problem. The issue is, if you're makpid, they shouldn't touch, so then like in the same room makes them not touching. It doesn't matter if they're in the same room, they're not touching. In other words, if you wouldn't let them touch, then you can't call them a single batch. And here, if it's tamei and tahor, you wouldn't let them touch, so it shouldn't be mukaf. The only way you could show that there are mukaf is by touching them, but by touching them you spread tumah. So it's sort of like a, you know, a dilemma. He wants you to be able to be mafresh tamei from tahor, but the problem is the only way you could do that is by letting them touch, but by letting them touch, you're being matam with them, that one too. So he has a very novel solution. He says, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Niteles min Tahor al-Tamei. You could take from your Tahor dough on behalf of your Tamei dough, your Challah, Ketzad, how are you going to pull that one off? Given the problem I told you. So he says, Isa Tahora v'Isa Tamea. Say you have two batches of dough. One's Tahor, one's Tamei. Noto kadechala me'Isa shelo hurma chalaso. You take a little bit of the amount of challah that you need from the dough that hasn't been tied. You know, what's going to be your challah, in other words, but you haven't taken the challah yet. V'nosen pachas mekabeitza be'emtza. And between it, your challah, what we call your will be challah, and the dough that you're not, that the tamei dough, you put between the two a piece of dough which is less than a kabeitza. And it's not makabel tuma. That's right. And therefore, now you touch them all together. So essentially, a train. You'll have tamei dough connected to a piece of dough less than a kabeitza. And then next, touching that, you'll have your what will be called challah. Now touching. And definitely their mukaf, and you say, fine, now I want the challah to become challah on everything, and everything's touching, and everything's good, and no tum was conveyed. Very clever. So he says, we put it be'emtzek kadesh yitzel min a mukaf, so it can be considered mukaf, all connected. V'cham osum, the cham say no way. For the same reasons they said before. He says it's a clever gimmick, but sooner or later someone's going to make a mistake and be mitam their challah, so we don't want that to happen, so forget it. No tithing Torah and Tameh in the story. Okay, and that's the din, like let's go.